I don't want to move this, but it might be a little awkward. Okay, so I was really happy when the department hired David Cates at the same time as David Gates, because I'm a really big fan of enunciation. All jokes aside, we're very lucky to have David Cates in the department and as a part of the community. I had a conversation with David on Friday night, and considering we don't know each other very well, I felt that he taught me a lot. He taught me that you could create your own title, which he did when he was hired by the department and decided to become the Guy de Maupassant Writer in Residence. And then he bestowed the Norman MacLean Fellowship on me, and it was quite an honor. David Cates' writing is brave and inviting and spare and full of wisdom. Like a conversation with a stranger, it can stay with you for many days. David Allen Cates is the author of three novels, Hunger in America, a New York Times notable book, X Out of Wonderland, and Freeman Walker, both Montana Book Award honor books. Cates is the winner of the 2010 Montana Art Council's Artist Innovation Award in prose, and his short story, Rubber Boy, is a distinguished story in the 2010 Best American Short Stories. His stories have appeared in numerous literary magazines and his nonfiction in the Montanan, Canoe, and Kaya, Outside Magazine, and the New York Times Sophisticated Traveler. He is the executive director of Missoula Medical Aid, a volunteer group of medical professionals providing public health and surgery services in rural Honduras, works with the Missoula Writing Collaborative, teaches classes on the short story in public high schools, is a part-time faculty in Pacific Lutheran University's low residency MFA writing program, and is this year's Guy de Maupassant Writer in Residence at the University of Montana. Please welcome David Allen Cates.
I think the key with the titles is you have to pick something that nobody's going to get envious about. And if there's no money involved, then people don't get very envious. I was thinking, actually, the Guy de Maupassant Writer in Residence was so easy that I was actually thinking about doubling it this semester. But the little paper I wrote it on was so small that I thought, if I write another title on there, it'll look like graffiti. Thanks for the introduction. Thanks for those who Judy and Deborah and everybody, anybody who was had anything to do with me being hired this year. I've been having a lot of fun. It's really fun to be over at the university and sit in Kevin's office and get to read Kevin's books. I get sick of sitting in my office and reading my books. It's been a lot of fun. I'm going to read a part from a, can you guys hear me? Is this working?
Yes.
Apart from a novel I've finished in the last year, the narrator is a young man in his early 20s who is writing to his friend, a young woman, who cut him down from a light fixture where he was trying to hang himself the year before. So he's writing her. And my whiskey's a long way away there, just a second. When Clint had all those whiskeys up there, I just couldn't believe he was going to drink them all. I thought, he's got to save one for me. But anyway, I brought my own. It's called Xochitl the Wonder Woman. She was pretty, short hair, looked like a dancer, big black eyes, but I didn't look. People who sit at bars oftentimes want to talk, but I had sat down in that exact spot after walking up and down various wings in the airport, looking for a place where I could watch the Olympics, see how Bernie,
this buddy of mine from Lake Forest, would do in the gymnastics. Either the televisions were on other channels, or there were no empty stools until I found this one. So I ordered a big, tall beer and a shot of whiskey, which I was sipping while settling in, getting ready for the drama. It was 7 p.m., and I'd been in the airport since about 1 o'clock, and I still had 4 hours until my flight to Costa Rica. She ordered something to eat, and I watched television. Eventually, too many ads, or maybe it was the smell of the fish tacos she ordered, I looked over as her plate came, and she looked at me. She said hello, and she started to talk. With some people, it's that way. Once you say hello, they tell you everything. In her case, she was going to Paris to begin a program at the Sorbonne in psychology. She'd been working for a few years in Portland teaching brain damage patients how to do simple things like walk or brush their teeth. When I told her how depressing I would find it to not be able to use my body, she frowned and said, as though it were something she'd read for a test, "It takes about 5 years to find other ways to keep the darkness away. But people do, and once they do, they're often as happy as they were before the accident." Well, I thought. So that was that. Actually, I was thinking how happy she must have made the men. A beauty visits them every day, lays hands on them. Hey, sure they stand. And while I'm thinking that, wondering if I should say it, flirt like that, she's suddenly on to talking about her roots, Slovenia, where she was born, and then to Miami as a child. She grew up there and went to college in southeastern Ohio before coming here 2 years ago. She said all of this like she'd said it too often, spinning out the quick story that took her from Slovenia all the way to this bar stool on her way to Paris. She said she'd just started getting used to Portland, but still didn't like it and was glad to be leaving. "Too waspish," she said. "Are you asking me?" "I don't know." "Well, what do you mean?" She shrugged. "Too white?" I asked. "That's not it," she said, and explained that she'd lived in eastern Kentucky when she was in college, which was even whiter, but different, and she liked it a lot more than here. She said she wasn't exactly sure what she meant by too waspish. "Too smug?" I asked. She grinned and nodded. "Yes," she said, "that's it." I'd impressed her, and for my prize, she turned to half face me. She wasn't paying a lot of attention to the fish tacos. In fact, she'd taken a carrot from her purse and began to eat that instead. And while she crunched away at that, she began to tell me about Kentucky, living in a tent for a year with somebody named Sarah. I kept looking up at the television, or else at her pretty white hand gripping the fat carrot. Back and forth. The floor exit started. I wanted to watch, and she noticed and apologized for distracting me. She had too short black hair, about an inch and a half all over, and it stuck up or lay down in kind of a tough, modern city girl look. But she had shy black eyes full of yearning. I said, "No, really, it was me who should apologize for watching TV when she was talking. It was just that I'd been waiting all day to watch this event." I told her she wasn't intruding, which was all she needed to hear, because she plunged onward with her story. Apparently, Sarah was a genius and could do anything, like program computers, raise dogs, grow vegetables, build a cabin in the woods with no power tools. My friend Bernie wasn't up yet, so I kind of half watched and half listened. I'd heard her say trans female this, trans female that, which eventually I couldn't help it, made me turn and look at her. I had to ask, what is a trans female? "A man who is on his way to becoming a woman," she said. I looked at her. I didn't know how to react because I hadn't heard who was trans female. I only hoped she wasn't. Bernie was getting to get his turn soon. We were friends when we were kids. In fact, we both started gymnastics together. He stayed with it, and although I barely saw him in high school, I admired him completely. He was at the gym all the time, practicing all the time. The rest of us fucked around in the parking lot or made plans to do this or that, and he was actually doing it, eating right, sleeping right, training hard. He inspired me, because when we started gymnastics together, he really wasn't much better than I was. And now he was the US champion, about to tumble in the Olympics. It made me think, hell, if Bernie could do that, then I could do something great as well. But Sochi had my interest as well with this trans female thing. What does on his way to becoming a woman mean, I asked. On her way, she said. What? On hormone therapy, she said. I cut my hands in front of my chest and raised my eyebrows. She nodded. And I pointed to my lap. Sochi finished the carrot and smiled coyly at her fish tacos. I waited a beat. I was afraid to ask, but the time had come. Who exactly are we talking about? She looked at me amused. Sarah, I asked. She had all of my favorite parts, she said. I couldn't take my eyes off her. What was I going to say? Just about when Bernie was ready to go, the coach and the camera getting in his face, this beauty Sochi is telling me about her romance with a trans female. Oh, I said, because I suddenly remembered how she'd said Sarah was a genius. Sarah had run away from home and lived in the woods and could make a cabin with her bare hands. Sochi loves Sarah. Sochi lost Sarah. Her eyes were brimming tears. Isn't this your man? She said and looked up at the TV. Grateful, I looked. Bernie had stepped into the corner of the mat. Immediately, I was nervous as hell. It looked distractingly bright in the arena, and then the camera zoomed in on his face. Very cool to see someone like that who you've known since you were six. He turned his gaze inward, stood still for a moment, then suddenly sprang forward in his first tumbling pass. The camera backed off, and he did a front handspring to back, a single front with a twist, a double, I don't know all, but my God, he got high in the air. And then he came down wrong at the end of that first run. His ankle turned and he fell forward out of the square, which was a big time point dockage. The ankle twist looked bad at first and my stomach fell, but he stood up right away, nothing broken, nothing damaged even. He stood for a second looking down at his foot, though, as though he'd seen a ghost. What horror, what happened? I'd been watching for this all day, and now this? But think of how long he'd been waiting, working, waiting, and now nothing. He was out of it. Even if he did absolutely perfect the rest of the routine, which he practically did, it didn't matter because in the first 3 seconds, he'd fallen. He was out, and it was over. And now that he was out, who cared about the rest of them? I didn't. And the suddenness of that loss of caring and suddenly not caring left me feeling empty and burned. I resented how I'd spent all day in the airport waiting more for this than for my midnight flight. In the last hour, trying to find a TV and a stool to watch and finally finding one, and now it was over. The Olympics are full of sports like this. I like sports like hockey or basketball where you can play terribly for a while and still win, still come back. That's my kind of sport. I hated gymnastics. I hated figure skating and ski racing. In fact, I suddenly hated all sports where you have to be perfect to not let anybody down, where you had to be perfect to win. All that ran through my head for about 5 seconds. I felt disappointment like a hole in my stomach, but when I turned from the TV, there was Sochi, still heartbroken and mourning her Appalachian lover. 2 years in smug Portland teaching people how to walk again or how to learn to live in a wheelchair, but it wasn't enough. Here she sat in an airport bar, dabbing her tears in front of a complete stranger. "I'm sorry," I said. "You were talking about parts?" It was the right thing to say, she laughed. Her napkin was pretty soggy, so I handed her mine. I can tell you this, she said, dabbing away, because you'll never meet her. But Sarah's penis wasn't much more than a tease. Good to know, I said. I finished my whiskey and took a drink of my beer. Because if I, by some fluke, do meet her, I said, I won't expect much. Again, she laughed, and the laugh quieted into a smile. She stopped crying, and the napkin was a ball in her hand. She had taken no more than a couple of bites of her fish tacos. She shrugged and told me the story again. Sarah ran away from home in Maine when she was 16 and learned to do everything on her own. She fixed cars, she built solar panels, she just dug in and figured things out. They lived together in a tent up in the hills for a year while Sarah built them a cabin. But soon after it was finished, Sarah told Sochi was too conventional for her. Sarah wanted to be alternative, and Sochi was a student, a scholar, and had a bright grad school, clinical, and research life ahead of her. Sochi was a Wonder Woman, Sarah told her as she was dumping her. She needed to go off and live the Wonder Woman life. Sarah was going to stay in the mountains. Sarah was not going to leave her cabin. Sarah was going to have her penis removed. Sochi started crying again when she said that. She gave me a look that appealed to me to understand her, and I might have. I don't know, the grasping, the yearning, the mystery of herself and her dissolving passion. She suddenly switched the subject and told me she felt lost. Happy to be going, the feeling as if her life were spinning out, no anchor, just one opportunity after another. I'll live in Paris and study for a while, she said. I'll learn French, get a PhD. It'll be amazingly great. But so what? What does amazingly great mean? When the fellowship is over, I'll apply for jobs and some other place will make me an offer and I'll go there. My turn to shrug. I thought about the millions of people in the world living in squalor, working all day, every day in sweatshops, living on tortillas and salt, rotting away in prisons, young women carrying water from a dirty well to a dirty husband and dirty children in a dirty shack and washing clothes and the shit-ridden stream, dreaming, dreaming, dreaming. I said, amazingly great is better than amazingly shitty. She laughed. You got a point there. She didn't really know what I meant, but I knew what she meant, or I thought I did. We live in a weird world where nobody is allowed to say the obvious. But Christ, she was 29 years old. What she wanted was a good man to love her madly and give her mad children and then to still love her more. More was the key. The first was easy. She was living in an amazingly great life. Great, empty life. Enduring connections? She didn't have any. Or enough. I'm sorry. Super great fellowships in Paris aside. What matters to a woman, what she'll talk about and live for and think about until the day she dies, is what goes into her vagina and what comes out. Strange that I would say that, but hey, the exception proves the rule. Sochi stared at me. I turned to feign interest in the rest of the gymnastics on television, but couldn't. Who cared about amazingly great Olympic medals? I took some large swallows of my large beer. I'd let it sit too long and it was warmer than I like. I took some more large swallows, I finished it and ordered another whiskey too, which I drank fast and then pointed for another. I offered to buy her one, but she shook her head. I could feel her lost self still reaching out to me, a man next to her at an airport bar. But as pathetic as that sounded, I was tired enough or after the second whiskey anyway, just buzzed enough to feel touched. Of all the thousands of people in this airport, I was the one she climbed on to keep from drowning in the swirl of random questions. Why was she going to Paris for this prestigious fellowship? Would she be going if she didn't have a prestigious fellowship? Maybe she'd be going to blank instead. What had she ever done that had any value at all beyond building an impressive resume? She knew she must have done something. She'd loved a trans female who rejected her for being too conventional. But how unfair. What kind of conventional Slovenian immigrant girl lives in a tent in Kentucky for a year? She hadn't even a clue how to argue, what to say. All she had, all any of us have when it comes to love, unique as we think we are, is conventional language. See me, love me, touch me. I surrender. Oh, 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 let's build a cabin. And of course, never let me go. Come to bed with me, I said. She looked surprised. Who wouldn't be? And I kind of half smiled, frowned, and stared. Was I serious? I kept my face blank, my eyes on her. I can't say for sure how serious I was when I asked it. The words, conventional words, just popped out, really, maybe as much a way as a way out of the heaviness of her story, the sludgy, sticky sadness of her questions. But when she asked me if I was serious, I looked at her mouth and her soft cheeks, and I suddenly wanted to see her face up close and kiss her. And I looked at her hands with too many rings and wrists with too many bracelets, and I wanted to see her naked. I was tired of thinking too. I wanted to do. I wanted to feel. Go to bed with you? She seemed to be teasing me for my choice of words, my conventional choice of conventional words, the conventional nature of our conventional barstool hookup. She wanted to get ironic, to rise up in the air and smile wryly at where we were. I wouldn't go there with her. I said simply, there are motels near the hotel. She quickly looked down, sniffed, looked at her plate and her hands, and then pushed the plate with the rest of her fish tacos over to me. I don't want the rest, she said. Do you? I nodded and began to eat her food with my fingers. She watched. The bartender who had tried to sell me some food with my drinks watched. I wonder how many strangers sat down and started talking, and one of them finished the other's meal. It was intimate. I looked up at Sochi, and she was looking at me with my mouth full, and it was as though we'd already had sex. And it's that look that I remember when I think about her. Very open, curious. Her skin gleaming in that light, the colored light of the barroom, her lovely neck and shoulders, breasts, waists, her dark purple, almost black pants, those little black ballet shoes with no socks, one tucked under her round ass on the bar stool. How can women sit that way? I could tell by her bright eyes. I almost felt I could have fallen in love with those eyes, moist and black, smart and funny. I could tell by her eyes she was struggling with what, as each second passed without an answer, became more and more of a certainty. I mean, as each second passed without her saying no, the more certain it was to happen. I should have insisted she say yes, rather than nothing. Not that it would have changed my life, or we would have been together any longer than we were, but at least I think it would have been a little less melancholy for her. Personally, I didn't mind melancholy. It's what things are, really. And I just wade through the darker waters and sometimes get to think the thoughts that fly away in the light. I wanted her for the reason men want strange women, so I could know something I didn't know before. But a woman usually needs more than that. She isn't in it for the knowledge. She's looking to be stirred up, transformed. And she needs a reason why she's letting this particular man do the stirring. And Sochi? I could see as she stared at me eating. Really, I think all of this was going on in about 2.5 minutes, the 2.5 minutes it took for me to devour her fish tacos and drink another whiskey. She was trying to come up with a reason. She wanted something she could tell herself, even if it was only that she needed the physical sensation. And I thought I was just the man for that. But judging by her face, she couldn't even come up with that one. I mean, she asked for the bill, signed the receipt, put away her card, and looked at me as if to say, okay, ready? But it was more like her move to Paris. She hadn't a clue why she was going. Apparently, just having the offer was enough of a reason. That and the fact that she hadn't been all that happy where she was. We got in a cab at the airport. It was raining. I held her hand in the back seat while she stared out the window at the blurry, bendy lights. At the hotel, I held an umbrella for her so she could get into the lobby dry. Maybe I was still trying to give her a reason. I felt her next to me, slightly behind me, while I checked in. I felt her hand on my shoulder. In the elevator to our room, we both got out our itineraries to see exactly how much time we had until our flights. I had 3 hours, she had 2.5. I held the door of our room for her, and she rolled her suitcase in, and I rolled in mine. She twirled, did a little curtsy. I closed the door behind us and bowed. It was one of those moments when you're trying to locate yourself in what is happening. It was one of those moments when you know sex means something, even if you don't know what, because of how it makes you feel. Just the idea of it, a little giddy. And then, of course, you immediately start wondering bigger things, things that are only peripherally related to sex. Questions like, who is this person? But as soon as I had her clothes off, she suggested I take them off as she stood passively in front of the bathroom mirror, watching as though still wondering who she was. Where she was, searching for a clue as to why she was. As soon as I had her clothes off, and she was more beautiful naked than I imagined, so beautiful she made my legs weak, and I dropped to my knees at her side to kiss the curve of her hip, worshiping that sweet swelling. As soon as I had her clothes off, she went limp. But more than limp, I mean worse. She went from a quivering mass of smart, funny, feeling young woman to a dull, flat, tired young woman. Her eyes, something I could never have imagined 2 minutes before, dulled as dry as sand. She leaned, a terribly lonely gesture, as though her sigh was the last breath of her life. She leaned forward to put her hands on the sink in front of the mirror, and she said, okay, as though to say, I'm ready, or go ahead, or now. Obedient, I stood up behind her, and I looked at her flat, dry eyes in the glass looking at me. At first, I thought she wanted to know who I was, this man who she was pulling inside her. But then I began to understand the question wasn't who I was, but who she was. Who am I sharing my body with, this strange man, she seemed to ask. I feel as if I should say something now like it was a horror, but the weirdness was more than I could handle and that I could not finish or something like that, but it wasn't like that. I found her passivity, except for her ringed fingers gripping the edge of the sink and those muscles in her well-braceleted wrists and forearms tense. I found her passivity, her eyes flat and empty, their weak searching like the weak reach of a dying man for something both invisible and out of reach. I found the whole thing suddenly, bizarrely erotic. I felt sucked up into her nothingness, and I liked it. I plunged onward with tremendous energy. I closed my eyes and pictured myself a small person, tiny, but with a huge cock wedged inside her, trapped inside her,
I imagined I was hanging there like that, my feet not even touching the floor, and I quivered madly for what seemed like minutes while I ejaculated. When it was over, I dropped off her like a bug. I staggered back against the bathroom wall and slid down to sit on the floor. So it was from that sweet angle that I watched her stand straight and take a deep breath, blink at herself in the mirror, and bend to pull up her panties without so much as a wipe, much less a shower. She reached for her bra and put that on, and then the rest of her clothes. She didn't speak, and neither did I, and I started to wonder if she was even going to acknowledge me at all when she suddenly bent down to put a dry kiss on top of my head, said thank you, even though her eyes said something different, more complicated. Something like, okay, now we've both looked for ourselves in each other and found nothing. I guess it was a real sharing of feeling, even if the feeling was nothingness. Did it make me feel more alone? Yes, it did. She'd taken the handle of a rolling bag and pulled it out of the hotel room into the hallway and left, let the door close, even as I was still sitting naked on the bathroom floor. I waited a few seconds like that, then scrambled to my feet and opened the door, but by then she was well down the hallway. Just another pretty young woman on her way to Paris. Okay. This is all more than you want to know, I'm sure. A little tale of my empty little life and sad sex with a stranger, true, true, all true. But you're the only one I could ever tell this to, and especially this part. I liked it. I mean, it made me glad. After Xochitl left, I became more aware of my breathing, more aware of my skin. I didn't want to shower either. I wanted to keep her scent on me. And even hours later on the flight to Costa Rica, I could still smell her on my hands and my face. And when I thought of her on another plane, her body resting against a soft seat and her face reposed in sleep, I wanted to kiss her again. I had planned to drink heavily on my flight. I can't sleep on a red eye unless I do. But with her all over my skin, I didn't have to. I felt content despite the sadness and loneliness and whatever else. I had a big vacuum inside me and I liked it. Just as I liked that she was flying 500 miles per hour across through the night sky to Paris with my semen inside her. Semi-aroused for the next few hours, I didn't want to sleep. The music from the headphones was lighting fireworks in my head. My entire life, I had never had an opinion about classical music, but on that dark flight with my head leaning against the window, I got a picture of the cold universe, a pattern of stars that went out forever with no love or hope between them, but this wild, swirling music. These notes so beautiful and sad and infinite, they filled the darkness and made me mad with joy. Whatever happened between Xochitl and me, judge it however you want. She could have gone off and had my baby. I could be flying away with a disease. But here's how I saw it. Because of her, for what? Her beauty? Her cunt? Her heartbreak? Because of her and that wild music. Bach, when it ended, the man said it was Bach. I fell a little bit more in love with the world. Thank you.